entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Hi there, and a good Sunday morning. It's the best of Downtown on this very first day of the month of November. Coming in like lambs, because that's the only way Kerry Haskell and I know how to be. Rich Kimble and Kerry Haskell with you here, brought to you each and every weekday and on Sunday morning by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Three of our favorite recent conversations on the program this morning, we'll talk with a Hollywood legend who walked away from it all at the height of her fame, Kim Novak. Gary Tagway of NBC Sports Boston will chat with us. And we get things underway by a really terrific conversation from a little over a week ago with actor and comedian Dave Foley. You know him from the Kids in the Hall, news radio, voiceover work in films like A Bug's Life, and so much more. Here's what happened when we caught up with Dave Foley.
Hi, how are you doing?
I have to get to the important question first, Dave. Because my last name is Kimble, I may be biased, but was Hank Kimble, the county extension agent, the best character on Green Acres?
He was one of, I don't know if he's the best character on Green Acres, but I'll say this. He's one of the greatest comic characters of all time.
Better than Sam Drucker, certainly.
A completely original character.
No question about it. So your love of Green Acres, your character's love of Green Acres on news radio, that was from your real life.
I've been a huge booster for people, trying to get people to watch that show again as adults now. So I know I watched it as a kid, and to realize just what a masterfully written show it was and how beautifully subtle all the acting is on that show, except for Eddie Albert, the straight man.
Yeah, and one of the great theme songs, too.
Oh, my God, it's genius. You get everything you need to know for every episode in that, you know. Kids these days, they don't even know what a credit sequence is.
I had grown up watching that in reruns and stuff, and then in my mid to late 20s, I can't remember what cable network it was. Nick at Night or something was running it. And yeah, it takes on a whole new meaning as an adult, and the comedy of it is so great.
The structure, and you know, everyone loves things that are meta now, and Green Acres almost invented it. You know, I mean, where you'd have Lisa Douglas commenting on the opening credits while lying in bed in the morning as they were appearing on the screen in front of her, that was like just incredible, absurdist genius. And, you know, and they're running gags. As I said, for me, it was like you had a half hour of ENS go every week. You know, it was amazing, absurdist theater every week.
Well, let's go back to your roots in the beginning of the Kids in the Hall, which has inspired so many people through the years, such a landmark group. What were the inspirations for you guys as young performers?
Well, one of them, was, I guess, for me would have been Green Acres. But as a group, obviously, we were very inspired by SCTV out of Canada, the second city TV show. And by Monty Python, but in a way that's contrary to what I think most people would think. Like we were inspired by Monty Python to be as little like Monty Python as we could be because we loved it.
Sure.
And same thing with SCTV. Because we loved SCTV, we didn't want to tread on the ground they had walked on.
One thing that I do see that you guys did a great job of keeping similar to Monty Python is sort of the timelessness of a lot of the stuff on that show. Because I went back and watched some episodes of it in the last few days knowing you were coming on. The comedy isn't time specific. It's funny regardless.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was, because consciously, as I said, when we started out, we said we're not going to do any parody of anything because SCTV, we all loved SCTV and they did the best parody ever. You know, but now you watch SCTV and you have to have watched, you know, Fantasy Island to know what they're talking about. So yeah, it gets trapped in its own time frame. And really, because I recently heard Eric Idle and John Cleese being interviewed, and they talked about how when they were starting out, one of the things they deliberately decided was they were not going to do any satire. Because they said everyone was doing satire in England at that time. They said people had like 4 or 5 years of nothing but satire. And so they said, we're not going to do any satire. And as a result, their show is timeless. So I think both of us, it was a reaction to the predominant comedy of our time.
We're talking with Dave Foley here on Downtown. It's hard for me to believe that news radio.
I'm being boring.
No.
Hey, everybody, listen up. I'm being very academic about comedy.
Well, we like that. I can't believe news radio debuted 25 years ago. It is and remains to me one of the best comedies, I think, in the history of television, with just an absolutely amazing ensemble. What was it like to be in the room working and being one of those many talented people?
Oh, it was fantastic. Sometimes it made it hard to get things done because you're in a room with so many people being that funny and that fun to be with. It took our director Tom Stronis having to yell a few times to get us focused to do anything. luckily we had a great director that we loved. That was one of the most amazing casts ever put together. I mean, Paul Finn just did a brilliant job putting the people together. And then on top of that, he put together one of the best writing staff, I think, ever on a television show. He just kept finding people that were of a like mind with himself that he thought were funny. And he made good choices. So that when we all got together, we all immediately liked each other and fit in together. So like he did a brilliant job of putting that whole group of people together.
That transition from sketch comedy to sitcoms is one that has made some performers stumble, but you seem to make the transition, made it seem very easy. Were there similarities in the productions of those two shows that made it easier to make that transition?
In that Gibson Hall, we did about half the show was done with a multi-camera setup. So that was similar. So I was used to that format. I was used to playing, to multiple cameras and knowing my cues and knowing my blocking and all that sort of thing that you need to do to make multicam work. So that definitely was made it easier. For me, the biggest transition was getting used to not working this hard. The idea of having to play one character and not have to put on my fake tits in the morning and wander about in high heels all day.
It was a relief for me when I could stop doing that too.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of work, getting pretty is really hard work. So it was a great relief to not have to do that anymore. That was amazing. For me, like just acting felt like being in semi-retirement.
I have to ask you about what is one of my favorite movies of all time. I think it's a comedy classic. I loved your work as Bob Haldeman in Dick.
Oh, good. I wasn't sure where you were going to go because I've been in so many bad movies. that was a good one. but yeah, I love that movie. But I grew up during the Watergate era, and I was a precocious kid who would go home and watch the hearings on TV. So for me, it was really fun to get to play, one of the men I grew up hating.
Is there anybody in this current administration, I'll put that in quotation marks, is there anybody you could see yourself playing when they finally make the movie of what we're watching now in real time?
Oh, my God. Well, I've been told many, many times to my deep, deep despair that I could play Lindsey Graham. I'm not sure if my skin wouldn't crawl off my bones if I tried to inhabit his persona at this point.
Hard to summon that righteous anger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So some of the, and keep that undertone of absolute insincerity.
Yes, yes. But enough that people can see it. Hey, you've done, Dave, so much voiceover work through the years. Is that enjoyable? I think people say, well, that's got to be easy work. And yet you don't have any other actors for somebody who's worked in close ensembles. You're working by yourself most of that time.
Yeah. It's surprisingly hard work. Especially if you're doing like a large, like doing something like A Bug's Life was really was surprisingly exhausting. I didn't anticipate it being so hard. Like at the end of a recording session for A Bug's Life, I would be physically exhausted and mentally exhausted because you have to create it all in your head while you're doing it. And you've got to keep this high level of energy up with nobody to play off of. Because you're usually alone in the studio. I mean, I was very lucky. I had John Lasseter and Andrew Stanton in the studio directing me, and they were great at conjuring up the visuals for me, and inhabiting the other characters, and pushing me to have the right level of energy. But man, at the end of the day, I would usually my voice would be shot and my head would just be mush from imagining all day. You got to stay in a room. You have to do it well. You've really got to believe that you're in those scenes while you're recording those lines, and that takes a lot of work.
So we've been laughing for a couple of days here in the studio at watching you read the letters of James Joyce, who it turns out very naughty man.
Yeah. I've got a pretty rock solid stomach for that kind of stuff generally, but I was stunned by that, stunned by the degree to which his predilections ran to the fecal.
Yes. Let's we've got a little clip that we believe is suitable
for. You can't run that on the air, can you?
Just a tiny bit. I think this is okay, but if it's not. Have the FCC call us. Here we go.
Yeah.
Tell me the smallest things about yourself, so long as they are obscene and secret and filthy. Write nothing else. Let every sentence be full of dirty, immodest words and sounds. They are all lovely to hear and to see on paper even, but the dirtiest are the most beautiful.
That was brilliant.
That's about the only part you took away.
Yeah, that was it.
There should be a warning thing to parents, if there are children in the room, that you should probably abandon them with wolves rather than let them do this.
I had a lot of fun taking it around the station and sharing that with everybody. I started with the HR person in the office.
Yeah.
She found it very funny, so I was safe at that point.
So she allowed you to let other people hear it.
It's just, yes. Right, it's only a notation in his personnel file, nothing serious.
Yeah. Well, that was Natalie Morales, genius to do that. She found those letters and gathered a whole bunch of her friends to come in and try to read them in as austere a way as possible. to try and PBS them to death.
Oh, yes, yeah, very much so. And the ending, I don't want to give it away, but the ending is perfect. You can check it out on Funny or Die. I think the first guest we had who told us about this was our friend Gilbert Gottfried, but you're out there doing things on Cameo as well. What kind of bizarre requests do you get from people on Cameo?
Well, mostly it's really nice stuff. It's mostly people wanting, to have birthday messages. Occasionally people will write scripts. Kind of for you to do, and some of them don't necessarily make any sense if you don't know who the people that are involved. And some people actually try to use Cameo to get you to appear in their movies through Cameo. Like they try and write dialogue for you to do, and say, "So I'm doing this movie, and I'd love it if you could, to read this dialogue, and we'll edit it into the movie I'm doing." And so we have to sort of go, hey, you can't get me to do that for this much money. That's what I do for a living.
I noticed you've had some comments on social media about UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, the socially acceptable term for UFOs now. Well, it's something I'm really interested in, and a part I'm really interested in the fact that more people aren't interested in it, considering the fact that the Pentagon has come out, the Pentagon and the Department of Naval Intelligence have both come out and on the record said UFOs are real. They're invading our airspace, restricted airspace, at alarming rates. They do things that defy the laws of physics, and we have no idea where they are coming from, and we have absolutely no way to stop them. So this is something that the Pentagon and the Department of Naval Intelligence have come out and said, and it's been published in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Politico, and still nobody cares.
It's fascinating to me, and we've had, I don't know if you've read any of Annie Jacobson's work, but we've had her on.
I have. Yeah, and I kind of feel like from what I can gather about her latest book about Area 51 is that she's just become a disinformation agent, really.
Well, some of what she's written about I find fascinating in Area 51, but also she wrote a book, Phenomena, that is about how the CIA has used people who can do remote viewing and have used ESP. And it's fascinating to me mostly to read her work and see all the things that the government is keeping secret from us.
Yeah, and there is a ton of things. Yeah, I just had a problem with when she infers that things like the Nimitz sighting and the sightings off of Virginia, that they could be dark projects, because that doesn't make any sense. Mm. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there's obviously, Hal Puthoff was deeply involved with remote viewing experiments and, and I guess Robert Bigelow was involved with some private research on that with NIDS. But yeah, it's amazing. That not only are the government doing these things, but they're doing they're kind of hiring out to independent firms like Bigelow's so that they cannot respond to freedom of information requests.
Have you had any personal experiences with UAPs?
I never have. I've never seen anything. I'd love to, but I guess I started thinking about it just by thinking that people say, oh, it's all anecdotal. Well, first of all, it isn't all anecdotal. There's an awful lot of hard evidence. But even if it was all anecdotal, you'd have to go, well, there's been this anecdotal reports in the millions going on for, going on throughout recorded history. Mm. And so if that's been happening throughout recorded history, you should try to figure out what it is. Even if it is anecdotal, why are all these people mistakenly seeing these things, if that's the case?
Absolutely. Well, it's fascinating work. Very interested to see your thoughts on it. So, Dave, what have you got coming up that we can look forward to?
This is live, right?
Yes.
then I can't tell you right now.
Okay.
But I'm actually starting work on something right now that I'm very excited about, but we won't be making a public statement about it for, I think, another couple of weeks. So, but I'll tell you that there's something that I'm very excited about, and I think the people who have liked the things I've done in the past, I think they will be excited about as well.
What people should do is follow you on social media at Dave S. Foley, and when the word comes out, they'll find out there. Go ahead.
I really wish I could tell you right now, but it's going to have to wait a couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, if you wanted to, you could tell us. I mean, who's going to hear? It's just us.
No, I get yelled at.
I don't want that to happen. Dave, we thank you so much. We've been fans of your work for such a long time. Thanks for making some time for us, and we wish you continued success.
Well, thank you for having me on. Please have me on again sometime.
Well, we will do that, definitely. Thank you, Dave.
All right, bye-bye.
That's Dave Foley here on The Best of Downtown on your Sunday morning, and that's high on our list of folks we've had a chance to talk to recently.
Recently, or since I've started doing the show, that's one of my top five. It's hard to narrow down to classify those top five, but he's in there.
And he's got this somewhat secret project he's working on up in Toronto. But he told you when we ended the conversation off the air, you got my number. We're going to take him up on that.
Absolutely, because I want to know the details of this, and I've been ticking the calendar since.
When we come back on the Best of Downtown, a Hollywood legend joins us. Kim Novak talks about Jimmy Stewart, Alfred Hitchcock, and walking away from the movie business next on the Best of Downtown.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle, a free Carfax vehicle history report, and Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
You love going out to eat and saving money. Well, the Ground Round in Bangor has different weekly specials every day of the week. Plus, happy hour at the Ground Round is way more than just 1 hour. During happy hour, you can get an appetizer for just $1.99 when you get another app at full price. And full mugs of Bud Light, Coors, and Miller Lite are just $2.99. Happy hour at the Ground Round is every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. and from 9 p.m. to close. And Sunday all day is happy hour, too. Want more details? Visit online at groundround.com.
Hi, this is Mike Toole of ClearPoint Capital in Bangor. I've been an investment advisor for over 25 years. Our firm is local, independent, and now with the addition of my two children, John and Jillian, we're truly a family business. At ClearPoint Capital, we help our clients grow and protect their investments to help meet their goals. Why not see what our team can do for you? Give us a call today at 307-7718 to schedule a free consultation. ClearPoint Capital, our family helping yours.
Winter's frost heaves and thawing are the perfect breeding season for potholes. These pesky road hazards can play havoc with tires, wheels, and front-end alignments. Here are some tips from Bangor Tire Company for driving over badly damaged roads. Slow down. Apply your brakes before hitting a pothole and release them just prior to impact. Keep your tires properly inflated. And finally, if your car's steering ever starts to feel strange, have your front-end alignment checked right away at Bangor Tire Company. 35 Market Street, Bangor.
Our next guest on Downtown starred in films like Pal Joey, Picnic, The Man with the Golden Arm, Bell Book and Candle, probably best known for her dual roles alongside Jimmy Stewart in Alfred Hitchcock's 1958 classic Vertigo. Kim Novak walked away largely from the film industry in the mid-1960s, a few appearances on film and television, but has mostly dedicated her life to a different type of art, painting and writing poetry. She has not given many interviews in recent years, so we were thrilled when she agreed to talk to us earlier this week here on Downtown. Well, first of all, thank you so much for making time for us today. It is a delight for us to get the opportunity to talk with you.
Good. I'm looking forward to it.
I watched the wonderful CBS piece that was done recently with Mo Rocca, and it showed the art exhibit, the show in Ohio, with your art on display, and you were there for the opening of that exhibit.
Yes, it was my retrospective, which is, I mean, quite an honor. I'm so thrilled. I mean, to me, it's better than an Oscar.
Well,
I recognized for my life's work.
I have to say, watching that, it seemed like that outlet, which is what you intended to do all along in your life, provides you with all the satisfaction and perhaps more than you got in your acting career.
More, much more. Well, because I felt, of course, when you appreciate it, it always feels good. And I never felt really appreciated in Hollywood. I mean, at least not by my reviewers. We're not. I think it's much kinder now. I think that people can understand a little bit more about who I am and who I was. And I think at that time, you know, in the 50s, 60s, acting was more popular rather than reacting. I'm a reactor rather than an actor.
What's interesting, too, because I think everybody who watches movies or television shows has an image in their mind of what that life is like. And I'm sure it was hard for some people to understand why you would largely walk away from that when you did. But when we see the way you have lived your life in the years since, it becomes abundantly clear that that was a wonderful choice for you.
Well, it was. It turned out, I mean, you never know when you leave something what it's going to do, but how it's going to affect you. But, sometimes you've got to make up your mind and do it for whatever. And it turned out perfectly because I felt reborn, actually, after I left, living in Carmel, Big Sur. I did. I actually felt like I was, for the first time, finding out who I was, who I am.
Do you look back on it now almost as if your acting career got you sidetracked from your real passion?
Well, that's true. It did. It interrupted my, I would have definitely kept moving in that direction. But as it turned out, I think it was a sidetrack, but it was a good sidetrack because I learned a lot from directors like Alfred Hitchcock. And in my art, I don't know if it's because of my influence from Alfred Hitchcock or not, but I love creating a mystery. I like painting where it looks like one thing when you first look at it, but if you really study it, it has other meanings. And so there's a lot of mystery in my work, and that's why I like to write poems oftentimes to go with my paintings, to give clues. It's kind of like Alfred Hitchcock when he drops clues in different places. Well, in my painting, I've got clues written in my verses to help explain my paintings while they look, as I say, you can't always judge what it is, what the meaning is.
I want to talk a little bit about your work with Alfred Hitchcock and what is hard for people to believe, a movie that did not get overwhelmingly great reviews at the time, but 60 years later, people look at as in some surveys, the greatest American film ever made, Vertigo. And I understand that you identified with the two characters you played, but especially Judy and Jimmy Stewart's character's efforts to mold her into the person he wanted was, to you, perhaps similar to what Hollywood wanted to do with you.
Exactly. I think that's why the role came fairly easy for me in the sense that I identified so completely with the studio trying, they hire you originally, they find you, and they find something special in you. But then they go about trying to change everything about you so that it's to their image. They want to play it safe. So they want to say, well, let's see. Let's give her a Marilyn Monroe mouth, and let's give her the eyebrows of Joan Crawford. And so they go about trying to make these changes, and it was a struggle for me right from the beginning, trying to, what I actually used to do was go into my room or go into a bathroom on the set and take off some of that extra makeup and stuff and try to bring a little back of me. I think it made a difference.
You had a good working relationship with Alfred Hitchcock, and he really let you have some say and some influence into the development of your characters.
Well, it's interesting. What Alfred Hitchcock is, he's really technically involved with all the different things like the music and where you stand and how fast you are delivering your lines, things like that. But he never gets into your mind. He always hires people that he feels have whatever it is he's looking for. And so what I loved about working with Alfred Hitchcock was the fact that he allowed you to become the character in your own way. He doesn't tell you how to think. He tells you where to stand, how to dress, all of those things. But he allows you the freedom of your mind. And that was the most important thing to me. It always has been. I need to find my own feelings about it. And he never messed with that. But he sure messed with the wardrobe.
Well, yes, and it was that that gray suit that has become so iconic that, as I understand, you didn't want to wear because it was uncomfortable. And that was sort of the point he wanted to make. He wanted your character uncomfortable.
Exactly. And it was so interesting because I don't know. And then he had me wearing black shoes. Well, I always felt like a dark shoe is sort of grounding you to the earth. And I thought, oh, no. And so when I discussed it with him, and he said, I want you to wear that suit and those shoes. And then I went home, and I thought, gosh darn it, I don't want to wear that. I don't like it. And then I thought, oh, of course. It's my clue on my character. And so that discomfort that I had when wearing that suit and all paid off, because it was the character. And yet on Judy, he said, now you can wear any color shoes you want to. And I said, oh, good, I don't want to be grounded. I want the same color as my legs. And he said, great, you do it. Because he wanted me to feel at ease as Judy, although as he starts to change her, she gets very uncomfortable because she's being put back in all the things. So it worked out perfectly. A good relationship with that director.
And how was the relationship working with your co-star, Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, you couldn't be better. I was so fortunate because, you know, I'm a simple person from Chicago, never studied acting and things like that. And to work with Jimmy Stewart, he was the same kind of person like I am. He's a reactor, he was, or is, I mean, in heaven somewhere. But I mean, in other words, rather than being an actor, he was a reactor, and both of us did. We both reacted to the opposite character, I to him, he to me. I mean, it was just ideal.
And you would work with him again in another wonderful movie, Bell, Book, and Candle.
Well, that was one of my very favorites. It was wonderful, and Jimmy was so perfect for that role. And I liked being a witch, a good witch. But, yeah, that was a wonderful movie. I loved it. Jimmy Stewart's the best person anyone could ever be around, or, you know.
We're talking with Kim Novak here on Dantan, and you've worked with so many talented people through the years. But I have to say, one of my very favorite performances of yours came, I think, a year later, 1959, with Frederick March in a great movie, Middle of the Night.
Oh, yes. I adored that movie. The studio did not want me to do it. They said, don't do it, because they wanted me to be in glamorous roles. But the role that I played, I just adored, and I identified with her completely. And it was wonderful to be a kind of person that maybe needed a father image, someone to something she didn't have. And of course, it was just, for me, a wonderful experience. And to work with Frederick March, who had been a movie giant for years, as the older man with a young girl, finding a different kind of relationship. It was wonderful.
Now, you worked early on. You were signed to Columbia, and you had some battles with Harry Cohn, but largely the biggest battle was over your name, and you wouldn't back down from that.
No, I mean, especially if you hear the name they wanted to call me. They wanted to call me Kit Marlowe. Well, I could not identify, because to me that wasn't a real person. For one thing, they said, oh, we're going to write up the fact that you used to be called Kit because of a kitten like you. And I don't identify with a kitten. I love cats, but I mean, that's not who I am. And so I did. I held it. And also, I think, well, roots are really important. You've got to feel that you came from somewhere in order to go somewhere. And so it was important that I kept my name. Very important to me.
And was it your idea to bring back that name that they wanted to use when you played Kit Marlowe in Falcon Crest?
Oh, you've done your history. You checked it out. Yes, it was. It was, because when I left Hollywood, I left it. But on the other hand, when they suddenly had this, and I thought, you know, I feel like doing something. I'd like to see what television is like. And I said, I'll do it, but I want to be called Kit Marlowe. And that worked out fun, because then it made it really fun for me to have that tie-in.
There's been so much attention, deservedly so, paid to the Me Too movement in the last couple of years, and you came up in the business at a time when studio heads were often all-powerful and took advantage of young actresses. How were you able to hold your own and protect yourself in those situations?
Well, true. Me Too existed then, very much so. But I, well, for one thing, Harry Cohn was the boss, and he wanted to make sure that he had people working for him that would respect him and listen to everything he told. And so he had no interest in trying to find a girlfriend with someone he wanted to work for him, because he wanted to be the boss. But, of course, there were always the producers and people that you met along the way that would test and see if they could seduce you. Luckily, I was always very independent and had a mind of my own. In fact, that made it difficult sometimes with some directors I worked with. But I was able to be in control of myself, of my own body, and my own mind, and that's what mattered to me. And so I had issues with it, with people trying to become like that. But I feel I was lucky in that I was strong in that sense.
We heard a friend barking in the background there, and I wonder
that's
if you could.
That's my little dog, Patches.
Well, could you talk a little bit about the importance of animals in your life? Your husband is a retired veterinarian. What is your love and the love you've received back from animals meant to your life?
Well, it's everything to my life. I've always felt a great closeness and attachment to them. But interestingly enough, when I left Hollywood, I got several different creatures, and one was a goat, and a wonderful little African pygmy goat. I just loved him. Anyway, but the thing is that he taught me a real lesson, that you have to, and when I left Hollywood, it was to find myself, in order to find out who I really was, what do I really stand for, because you get so confused when you're playing all different roles. Mm. Every time you played one, you left with a little bit of that character still attached somehow. And so when I got out of Hollywood, I thought, I'm going to get some animals. I want to get an animal particular that would be not, like, a dog is going to love you no matter what you do. I mean, some awful people do terrible things to the dogs, and the dogs love them. So I knew that I could find a dog that would love me. But I thought, I saw this billy goat, and I thought, I wonder what this goat. And interestingly enough, we became one of my very best friends. But if I would ever wear a scent, like a perfume or a whatever, he didn't trust me, and he'd want to get me with his horns. And so I learned so many lessons from different animals. In fact, that's the book I really wanted to write. It was called Creature Teachers, because they teach you so much. When I left, again, I didn't want to be influenced by how much money I had or how I looked. And so with an animal, they're not judging you by what's your wealth or anything like that. So you really got to know who you were because of how they treated you. Did they love you? Did they respect you? And that you earn from animals, especially the wilder the animal, the more true it is that they are, that you can find out who you are and what you stand for.
No question about that. We mentioned your art. You talked about your poetry. You also have done some songwriting through the years as well.
As I did, as a matter of fact. Harry Belafonte recorded one of my songs. It wasn't a hit, but I did the lyrics for it. I used to go with someone that was a musician. He worked with Nina Simone. And so we would oftentimes sit out on the ocean on the rocks, whale watching, and he'd be playing. And I'd always written poetry since I was a little girl. And so I just started writing, and we sold quite a few of our songs. As I say, no big hits, but we did them. And they were pretty good, mostly folk songs, but I love to write.
People can get a look at some of your art at your website, KimNovakArtist.com. It has been such a treat and an honor for us to have a chance to talk with you today. Thank you so very much for making time for us, and we wish you continued good health and success.
Thanks. It was very enjoyable talking to you. You have a good time, and hi to all your people out there. I'm sending you love all the way.
Man, that was such a fun treat. Kim Novak, 87 years old and absolutely as sharp as the day is long. She was wonderful.
That was a great interview. You don't get many chances, and I've mentioned it before, to talk to somebody who experienced that studio era of Hollywood. You know, Peter Bogdanovich was at the very tail end of it, but she was making movies with these people.
Right.
It just amazing.
Yeah, that was great. When we come back, well, a legend certainly in Rumford, Maine, and around the downtown program as our first ever guest on the show, our friend Gary Tangway of NBC Sports Boston, coming up next.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Central Street Farmhouse, downtown Bangor, for the best home brewing ingredients, equipment, and advice that you'll find anywhere. Plus, make your own wine right in the store. How does that work? Pick a wine kit, make an appointment, and whip up 6 gallons of the best wine you'll ever taste in less than 30 minutes. 2 months later, come back to bottle it and take it home. They offer these wine classes every day they're open, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Call 992-4454 or see them on Facebook to find out more.
What makes a community thrive? The people who live in it. When you use your First National Bank Visa debit card at participating local businesses, you save on everyday purchases while supporting the people who work day in and day out to make your town a vibrant, unique community. Receive cash back on purchases and support the local businesses that make our communities thrive. Bank local, buy local. Learn more at dreamfirstrewards.com. First National Bank. Dream first because you can. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor. Back on the Best of Downtown Sunday morning, Rich Kimball, Gary Haskell here. Our next guest, well, look, I shouldn't sell him short. He was in one of the biggest movies of last year, Knives Out.
Mm.
In his second profession, doing some acting on the side when he's not knocking them dead at NBC Sports Boston. We had a chance to catch up with our friend Gary Tangway on Thursday's show, a legend as well from NBC Sports Boston. It's our friend Gary Tangway. Hello, Gary.
Did you just call me old?
Look, I know you're younger than me, so I'm not calling you anything, man.
Somebody said to one of my coworkers, they were speaking at a college, and they said, "Do you know Gary Tangway? That guy's a legend." And I was like, "Phew." I used to call George Hale a legend.
Well,
you know, that's where my mind went.
And he still is. Funny you mentioned George. We had Gary Thorne on the other day, and when we were lining up the interview, Gary said, "Hey, what's up with George? I usually shoot him an email, and I haven't talked to him. Is he doing okay?" I said, "Yeah. He's doing okay. He's headed down to Florida on vacation, and I'm still hoping and planning that he'll speak at my funeral."
No question, Rich. No question. We're all there. He's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'd like to be doing this. I'd like to be doing something at 88. I don't know if it's this I want to be doing, but I'll be happy with you upright and taking nourishment.
Yes, and traveling to Florida.
That would work, awesome, too. That would be a nice little fringe benefit there. How have you been?
Everything's good. You know, everything's good. The Celtics are playing lights out. And Tatum's just stepping it up. And everybody's talking about Brady. It is just, for a sports talk show, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, so let me ask you this right now. With all that's been going on in the Boston sports scene in the last couple of months, we used to look at Boston sports, and it was the gold standard for everybody. It was the home of champions. But now I ask you, Gary, which team is the least dysfunctional of the major Boston sports teams?
It's the Celtics, I think, right now. It's the Celts. The Celts are not in the class, in my opinion, of the Clippers, even though they did beat them in overtime, and or the Lakers, and they lost by two to the Lakers. But the Celtics are right there. They're right on the doorstep, and everybody's getting along. It's a great locker room. Coach has got control of the players. You know, the Bruins right now, I think, have a bit of, an identity crisis. I think Don Sweeney wanted to make a bigger move than he did. I think you take a look at the Bruins, and the truth is they got to the Stanley Cup last year because some teams that shouldn't have lost.
Right.
And the Red Sox are just, they're rebuilding. I don't care what anybody says. You know, they just, they are. They're rebuilding, and I'm okay with that because they've won four championships in like 19 years, so it's okay. You know, they spent money on all the players. Now it's time to retool. And, you know, the Patriots, with what's going on with Brady, I mean, there's a lot of dysfunction going on there. So it's the Celtics.
All right, so let's talk about the Brady situation. No news is not necessarily good news. It sure seems, without hearing much in the last few weeks, that, as you've been saying all along, he's out of here.
It's the weirdest thing, isn't it? Here you have a guy that is the greatest football player of all time. I mean, okay, you want to argue Jim Brown? I mean, we could be here all day. But, you know, arguably, not just the greatest quarterback, but the greatest football player of all time. And he's going to be a free agent, and the team that he won six Super Bowls with him may not want him. And the truth is, that might be the right call. It's crazy. You know, I see it both ways. Brady wants to be paid more money. He also wants to play on a better team. The Patriots right now, they have some problems, okay? And Bill doesn't want to become a team like Green Bay, where they pay their quarterback $35, $38 million, and they don't have any other players. Now, with the salary cap, you get a lot of room. But still, you know, Belichick likes value in players, and he likes to spread out the money. So, you know, if Tom wants to get paid all that money and wants to play on a better team, Tennessee's the answer. The Patriots have some rebuilding to do. The Patriots are not in the same situation where they've been that, like, oh, you know, they'll be back in the Super Bowl. If Brady comes back to the Patriots, I don't think they're a lock for the Super Bowl at all. At all. So the reality is, as crazy as it sounds, it might be best for both parties for Tom Brady to go elsewhere.
I agree with you. And if Belichick's going to stay around for, let's say, another 5 years or so, he wants to begin building for the future, I would think, as soon as possible. And that doesn't mean having a middle-aged quarterback out there and finding some short-term solution.
When you have a guy like Brady at this stage of the game, the offensive line was eh, and they're going to lose Joe Tooney because he's going to be paid a ton of money. I don't know what the situation with David Andrews is coming back from that health scare. So that means you got a guard question and you got a center question. You don't know how well Isaiah Wynn's going to play. He's been hurt all the time. So that means you have question marks, major question marks, three-fifths of your offensive line with a 43-year-old quarterback and your running game. Julian Edelman's your best receiver. He's old. Okay, that's not a great situation for a 43-year-old quarterback. And Bill knows it. And, you know, and that's the hard reality of it. So to me, you look at Tennessee. Running back, because they're either going to franchise Henry, they're going to pay it. Got an offensive line. Got some tight ends. Got some receivers. Got a defense. Got a coach that's just like Belichick, who also happens to be a good friend of Brady. The Tennessee Titans are a better team than New England. The Tennessee Titans right now are a prime team for an older quarterback. I mean, like Elway, right? I mean,
right.
Elway won his two Super Bowls. He had a great offensive line. He had a running game. 43-year-old quarterbacks, no matter how great they've been, cannot succeed behind an offensive line that has problems at three of the five spots. You know, that's the harsh reality of it. You know, and that's what's going to be hard for Patriot fans to swallow. You know, if Tom goes elsewhere and Bill lets him go, I don't think you can blame either one.
No, and it's not the way people want the story to end, but I think that's what happens when you've got a guy who is in the kind of shape Brady is in, who has been pretty public about wanting to play, frankly, longer than anybody has ever played successfully at that position in the league.
Right. I mean, you know, and another thing, you know, you want, one of the reasons why the Patriots were so successful in the beginning was team chemistry. And Tom Brady and Willie McGinnis and Troy Brown had a lot to do with it. And right now, you know, Brady doesn't want to be around these young kids. He doesn't want to come in for OTAs.
Right.
He doesn't want to be there when he doesn't have to be. And it's not so much about getting to know the receivers. It's just building team chemistry. You know, guys are together all the time. Guys play for each other. And I think Bill knows that that's what he needs to do with this team. The Patriots have to turn the corner. They have to look for the new Gronk. They have to look for the new Edelman. They have to look for the new Brady. You know, I think that's the reality of it. And, you know, Tom doesn't want to come in the spring. I don't blame him. But you need guys now that want to in order to rebuild for the future.
We're talking with Gary Tanguay here on Downtown. A rebuilding year certainly for the Red Sox. And yet, I look around at the American League East. The Yankees are getting clobbered with injuries, particularly to their pitching staff. I'm not sure even in a rebuilding year, they still can't contend for a wild card spot.
Well, I think you're right, Rich. And when you take a look at Chris Sale, and I think I read this morning they're going to start him on the injured list, but, you know, can Chris Sale be healthy at the right time? Because he's never been healthy for an entire season. Excuse me for a moment. Can he be healthy at the right time? Then can you grab a couple of pitchers, Erod, you know, who pitch well? The funny thing about baseball is, you know, teams come together when you least expect it. And this may be the right man.
Hey, Gary, appreciate it. As always, thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, Rich, we'll see you later, buddy.
Thanks.
You know, look, he got whacked because he got whacked. We all know that. But these guys all get along, and whether you think they should have hung on to Mookie or not, you know, they've still got some really good players. So I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong at all. You know, I don't know what the hell they do with the bullpen, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're competitive.
Is Cora coming back?
What's that, Rich?
Do you think Cora's coming back after his suspension?
He might. I think so. I mean, I think that that's what John Henry would like to do. And I don't think he's wrong. I don't think he's wrong. I would try to do that. If he could do it in a year, I would try to do it. Because he's a really good manager. And we can debate. And they cheated. Look, they cheated. Houston cheated. I believe the Red Sox cheated. Technology gave them an incredible advantage. They lost their way when it came to sign stealing. You know, I believe sign stealing is okay when you do it organically. Technology is cheating. But that doesn't mean the guy should never coach again. If I'm Henry, I want him back. He's a great manager. I mean, he's a great manager. And I would bring him back.
If only, although we wouldn't have needed it, but if only we had been good at sign stealing in the old modern screen print softball days.
Yeah, I know, man. You had that complex, you know, system down, you know. And then, like, you and Fudd would, like, change the signals every inning, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, most of the signals involved how long we were going to stay out and drink after the game.
I was going to say the signals got pretty blurry.
Yes, yeah, no question about that. It's Gary Tanguay on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. Our thanks to Gary, Dave Foley, and the great Kim Novak. And thanks to you for making us a part of your Sunday morning. Join us tomorrow afternoon. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Sean Latch from the Amera Astronomy Center, Alan Adams of the Maine Edge with movie reviews on Pass the Popcorn. And we talk with the voice of the University of Maine women's basketball team, Don Shields. It's all tomorrow afternoon at 4 here on Downtown. Have a great rest of your Sunday. We'll see you next time on Z62 Retro Radio. Forget all your cares, so go downtown, where I'm